everybody, it's Rob Benedict.
And I go by the name Richard Spade Jr.
And we're talking about season 3, episode 12, Juste in Bello.
Just in Bello, which means just barely in Bello.
Not quite Bello, just before Bello. Yeah. Hey, you know what?
What?
What was exciting about this is that you and I have been going to a convention in Italy now for about 12 years, and that convention is called Juste in Bello, and I never knew why, and now I do.
I still don't know why this episode is called Juste in Bello. But
that's true. I don't either, but I hope we're going to get into it in our fun facts.
Yeah.
But before that, we got lots to talk about, and before we talk about that, we'd like to say, you know, look, we still hear about people who are discovering the podcast and are so excited to hear that we are doing this. So please tell a friend, put it on social or near a sandwich board to help get the word out.
What if you just wore a sandwich? Do you have to wear the whole board?
Sure, you can wear a sandwich. I don't know if it's going to do anything for our podcast.
No, but it might get people talking. You know what I mean? Hey,
that's true.
Who's that kid wearing a hoagie? You know what
that's
I mean?
True. Well, look, we're just excited. People are talking about the podcast, and we're excited, keeping Supernatural alive. So thanks for being here, and really do invite your friends, because we love,
you know, if
the
you,
more the merrier.
If you decide to wear a sandwich to promote the show, you're going to walk around in a sandwich. I strongly suggest you create your own playlist with two musical acts. Just two musical acts. It's all you need. Put on the meatloaf and then bread. And then you
and
can
bread.
Walk around,
okay.
Walk around okay. in your sandwich.
Okay, great. So that's fantastic. So now, I honestly see it on a t-shirt already. It's on a t-shirt. Are you ready for Juste in Bello?
Are you ready to Juste some freaking Bello? Why?
Searching for the colt, Sam and Dean track Bella to Monument, Colorado.
Why don't they go to a horse farm? That's where you find colts.
It took me a second. It took me a second. We're going to get a lot of that because it's my COVID fog. It just takes me a second.
COVID fog is also a great band you could play while
great
you're wearing
band.
Your sandwich.
Terrific
promoting
band.
The show.
They break into her hotel room but do not find the colt. They discover that it's a trap.
It's a trap. The hotel room's a trap.
Law enforcement busts down the door, followed by Agent Henriksen, who's been trying to arrest the brothers since season 2's Night Shifter.
Hmm.
Bella tipped Agent Henriksen to Sam and Dean's location. So the brothers are arrested and placed in the local sheriff's holding cell. While they are being held, a possessed FBI agent shoots at Dean, but only hits him in the shoulder before Sam is able to exorcise the demon.
I believe that was Dom DeLuise's son, Peter DeLuise.
That is correct. It was Peter DeLuise, the oldest of three DeLuise brothers. Michael and David are the other brothers. How's that for some fun facts right in the middle?
Yeah, nice.
An FBI helicopter arrives to take Sam and Dean to a federal prison, but the helicopter explodes. And many of the officers outside are found dead
with their throats
slashed.
Quit slashing my throat.
The local sheriff wants to go out and fight, but Henriksen realizes they are under siege. The power goes out.
You know, it's funny. I was just reading along with you, and I misread that sentence. I read it as the local sheriff wants to go out and fight, but Henriksen realizes they are underage. You guys are 21. We're not going anywhere.
Well, at least he's still got his morals. There are just a few people trapped inside with Sam and Dean. Henriksen arrives at the boys' holding cell and surprisingly shoots the sheriff in the head. The brothers quickly exorcise the demon that has possessed Henriksen. He apologizes to the brothers after realizing that all of their talk about demons is true. Sam and Dean quickly take control of the situation, securing the station with salts and sigils. They give protection amulets to people and reveal their anti-possession tattoos.
Yeah,
Is this the first time we've seen their tattoo?
I think it's the first time they've seen their... Yes, I think the answer is yes.
Ruby shows up and tells the boys this is all because of Lilith, the demon who wants to be queen and lead all demons. Ruby suggests that they use a powerful spell that will vaporize all the demons in the area. Dude, what's funny?
You can't... No one can say Lilith without sounding like they have a lisp.
Right.
It's impossible. You're like, oh no, Lilith is here.
Lilith, the queen of the demons.
What if he said, so you have to stop?
So Ruby suggests they use a powerful spell that will vaporize all the demons in the area. Dean refuses because it would require sacrificing a virgin. He convinces Sam they have to fight. The demons attack. There's a huge brawl in the station and all the demons get trapped inside. A pre-recorded exorcism is played over the loudspeaker, sending the demons back to hell. Henriksen tells Sam and Dean that he'll report that they died in the helicopter crash. The brothers leave. Soon afterwards, a little girl shows up looking for the brothers. Guess what? It's Lilith with the white eye, the white-eyed demon.
Wait, Lilith? Lilith came back It's all over Sam and Dean? Oh, no.
That's the worst.
That sucks.
Yes, it's Lilith, the white-eyed demon. She destroys the building and kills everyone in it. Later, Sam and Dean see on the news what has happened. Ruby shows up and scolds the brothers and says, these deaths are on them.
Man, how badly would you want... Oh, never mind. That's Ruby. You want Bella to scold you. You don't care if Ruby scolds you.
Oh, man.
You want a little scolding from...
Yeah, I want her to steal my colt. And I'm sorry, everybody. That was the cold medicine talking.
That's great. That's great. I love it. I like it. For all the guys out there who refer to themselves as a stallion, Rob is not your competition. He refers to himself as a colt.
That's right.
He's a knobby-kneed foal.
And boy, Ruby really, she's angry a lot.
Yeah. I mean, she's got a tough, I mean, you know, she's a demon.
She's a demon. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's not a toe-tapping profession that leads to a lot of upbeat happiness. The workplace stress alone, you know?
I should walk a mile in her shoes, in her hooves.
In her cloven hooves. All right. Well, now it's time for Rob and Rich review. Robert, how doth thou review this episode?
I really like this episode. I think it was chock full of super guest stars. I'm going to start there, including our favorite Amy Garcia, good friend of ours from Lucifer, who played the wide-eyed virgin who worked in the office. We also have Henriksen, your buddy.
Charles Malik Whitfield.
Yeah. And then there's the guy that played sort of one of the cops that, I feel like I've seen that guy around for years.
Yep. Character actor, works all the time.
Yeah, and then, of course, we've got the DeLuise, Peter DeLuise, you know, from the original 21 Jump Street, who shows up for a little cameo. I wonder if he was just up there working in Vancouver and knew somebody, and they threw him in there.
No, I think they backed a dump truck of money up to his house and said, can we get a little DeLuise action on this episode? And he said, sure. let me count the bills. And when he was done counting, he said, sure, I'm in.
Sure. I like episodes that take place in one location, like when they were trapped in the bank.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Like, it was that kind of episode for me, trapped in the police station.
And,
you know, how do we defeat these demons?
And it's good acting too, man. Like, I think, you know, Charles Malik Whitfield is great. So yeah, fun is that character, you know?
And him finally realizing, oh, the boys aren't the shitbags that I thought they were.
And DeLuise is great.
Yeah.
Amy Garcia is always great.
And Dean gets shot through the shoulder and it barely phases him.
Yeah, gets shot through the shoulder. Like, you've got a little case of the sniffles and you're canceling everything right and left willy-nilly. He gets shot in the shoulder. Doesn't miss a beat.
Anyway, so I was like, oh, so this is that. Of course, they named a whole convention after it. It's a great episode.
Yeah, of course, agreed.
What about you?
I enjoyed it. The same reason. It was almost like same thing I liked about the banquet. Like you said, it's got this sort of pressure cooker sort of vibe because it's all happening in this one tight space, and it has like a happening in real time kind of energy when you do these kind of episodes, and I think that's really fun. It feels like it's happening in real time. Oh no, this is happening. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. We've got to do it before things go pear-shaped, even though things are already going pear-shaped. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and then there's a huge fight at the end, and you know, the thing about this show too is like the stakes are so incredibly high. Like
stakes.
Any other show, I feel like, you know, you go, well, we'd have to sacrifice a virgin. And Amy Garcia is like, well, I'm a virgin. And then they'd be like, well, we're not going to do that. But like in this, they almost did. You know what I mean? She was like,
yeah, well, Sammy sort of showed his true colors there. His little proclivity for, if you're not banging, you're dying. That's his sort of motto. You know, that showed up. I thought that was like not great, you know, showing by Sam.
Yeah, that's going on a t-shirt for sure.
It better
you're not
be.
Banging, you're dying.
It's like get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah.
Get busy banging or get busy dying.
I also liked when Amy and the younger cop dude were on the roof during the fight. And she's like, I'm definitely having sex when this is over. And then she's like, but not with you.
Oh, boy. I'm sure, Rob, I hope you didn't strain your eyebrow muscles thinking, hello. I know how you get.
It's a funny bit. It was a funny bit. But then at the end, Lilith comes in and kills them all.
Lilith comes in as a little girl.
And kills them
all. Hello, I'm Lilith.
Hey, and she was great.
She's
Whoever's
great.
Playing Lilith at this point. Lilith. Great actress.
Licking a lollipop.
So I'm trying to think how we can do this review and mix it up from what we normally do when we kind of like an episode.
Well, I know what I'm saying. I mean,
Well, let's hear it.
I'm giving it to Kenny Rogers. It's not a full Stapleton, but it's a rock solid, really enjoyable, really pleasant, strong episode. It's getting a Kenny Rogers.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it, you know, if you go Kenny Rogers, that's really confusing with Kenny Loggins. A lot of people get Kenny Loggins mixed up with Kenny Rogers. They're both bearded singers.
Nobody's ever gotten those two confused, ever.
I have.
Dude, you don't know your Randy Owens from your Eddie Rabbit. That's your problem.
Oh, man, nobody does. Get a dollar to anybody who knows what he's talking about.
Or your Billy Gibbons from your William Golden.
Billy Gibbons, I know. Who's William Golden?
From the Oak Ridge Boys.
There you go. Of course. So I'm going to go ahead and say that that this gets, well, it gets a Kenny Loggins. I don't know what else to tell you. It gets a Kenny Loggins from the 80s. It's Justin Bello at Lilith, Arrival of Lilith. See the tattoos for the first time. It's a classic.
We'll see. Oh, William Lee Golden. I forgot his middle name.
Oh, thank God that you found that out for us. But yeah, so Kenny Loggins, 80s.
So Danger Zone Loggins and Gambler Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
A couple of Kennys.
Yeah.
All right, you get a couple of Kennys. It's like, right. Hey, I got a couple of Kennys in my pocket. You want to go down to the pub? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like currency.
Fantastic. All right, well, let's get into an interview now. We have once again with us director, executive producer,
America's sweetheart,
Phil Segrisha, returns to the podcast. You know, both Richard Spate Jr. and Phil Segrisha both worked on the 1980s series Freddy's Nightmares, but not on the same episodes.
And Phil edited the TV movie A Mother's Revenge, a TV movie based on the novel by Richard Spate Sr.
And Phil edited Sam Circus, right?
Right. Which was directed by Bob Singer and starred Richard Spade Jr.
And was a pilot that never saw the light of day. Well,
never saw the light of day. But for that pilot, though, I wouldn't be involved in Supernatural. Right now, Rob would be hosting this podcast by himself.
Well, thank God that didn't happen. Everyone's thankful for that, except maybe me. But now,
we have no time for the interview. The intro was too long.
You know what? We'll see the light of day. This interview with Phil Segrisha.
Let's dive into this, Robert.
Phil Segrisha, thank you for being back with us.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
So, Phil, you have a double header here of Phil Segrisha classics.
Yeah, there we go.
And starting with Justin Bello. Now, first of all, this is the first time Rich and I, we go to a convention every year in Rome called Justin Bello, but this is the first time we've heard, we even knew it was an episode. So what is it called? What does that mean, I mean?
I believe it's The Rules of War. Sarah Gamble wrote this, did an excellent job. Her scripts are always fun.
And always.
Yeah. It was supposed to be kind of a bottle show because it all takes place inside
the precinct. Station. Yeah.
But it was, you know, whenever they say it's a bottle show, it always turns up being a magnum of a bottle.
Yeah.
They're never like, you know, cheap.
Well, I think, you know, Rob and I were struck by some similarities between this and Night Shifter in so much as it has that ticking clock, almost feels like it's in real time. Kind of vibe. Was it structured like that on the page, or is that something you bring to it going, okay, I've got one room, I better turn the heat up in this space?
I think it was on the page that way. I mean, it was one of those where, you know, you have to set it up that they get arrested, and then you set up that Hendrickson is there, you know, and we've already established him as a guy chasing them. So it was easy to kind of get the players in place, you know, a little country, you know, sheriff's department type of thing out in the middle of, you know, Colorado, or I think it was. But, you know, it was on the page. Sarah, like I said, she's a top writer and it was all there. Again, it was kind of one of those, like, let's see if we can, you know, pull in some of our overall budget, I think. This was also looming right in front of us was the writer's strike.
Right.
Yeah.
A writer's strike. So this was the last episode we shot before the writer's strike.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. You talk about the through line of small town, you know, big city FBI guys meet up with small town police station. Agent Hendrickson really an a-hole to the small town cops.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of his thing. You know, he doesn't have time anymore. He's kind of, his boss is on his case for not bringing these guys in sooner.
Now, what do you know what led you to get Peter DeLuise?
Peter lives there.
Right.
He lives, and I think we had always had him on our, you know, on our radar.
Radar.
But it was what kind of one of those things that it all kind of worked together. You know, it's like his schedule was open and he was doing Stargate, maybe. I think he was on Stargate.
I was going to say, he probably moved there after 21 Jump Street, right?
Right. And he'd been directing. He's directing a lot. So I think he's not up there waiting for an acting gig. I think he was super cool and super fun to work with, even though he didn't have that much.
Yeah.
I think he jumped at it because we'd been there for a while. I mean, this was year three. So he knew that there was, you know, the show seemed to have some legs to it. So
yeah, that was cool. It's always great to see him. We love
yeah, that was cool. That was a brothers. cool get. And you know, Charlton Leake Whitfield does a great job in that role as Hendrickson. And I think this one is the most three-dimensional version of that character he got to play. You know, because before it's like man with mission, yeah. Chip on shoulder, go, go, go. And then now you get to see his humanity, his sort of cocky, you know, internal and external celebration about this, you know, capture, but then the slow chipping away of his confidence and his confusion kind of taking over is great. He just does such a nice job with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, he comes in with all the tools, you know, and he's, again, super cool to work with. And, you know, it was a fun, there's that quiet moment where he and Dean have the, you know, man-to-man kind of where you're from, three divorces, that sort of stuff. You get his backstory. So you see the human behind
right.
the badge, you know. And so I think all of that, it does, you know, it makes you care about the characters a bit more because then yeah. what follows is, you know.
Yeah. Nice. Look,
right.
I saw it coming. We all saw it coming. No one was surprised. And yet it's so well done. The I shot the sheriff. Yeah, but you didn't shoot the deputy bit. It's great. Yes. And I got to know, because you're a man with razor sharp comedy timing, and so does Jensen also has that. And you guys timed it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of beats. It's not like saying it.
Yeah.
Which,
you have to have somebody react to Dean's line. And I remember shooting that scene, laughing. We were all laughing. Because at first we thought it was really funny. Then we thought it was dumb, I think. And then because it's not funny anymore, right?
Right, right.
But I think the quick cut to Sam turning his head to him.
It's so great. It's such a great his reaction. Right, but also,
right.
Just to circle back, it's the fact that Jensen has that moment of, do I say this or do I not? Like, yeah.
Do I say it?
That's the thing that almost sold the joke better for me was his... He didn't go blah, 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 like a sitcom. You see him like hear it, process it, go, and then say it.
Those are so much fun to do because his timing is spot on, right? Like you say. And
the brothers' chemistry at this point in the show is really rolling. I mean, they really have it down now. Just the, you know, the interaction, just a look from Sam and it really completes funny. It.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and Dean's like, I know I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, but he didn't have a chance.
I had to say it, you know.
He said
what he said. I'm just reacting to what he said. You know?
Yeah, right. Someone's got to say it.
Somebody's even thinking it. You're thinking it.
So there are lots of extras in this that are pretty important. All
the demons, Robert, the demons.
What am I trying to say? The demons that come in. Is that hard to, you know, as a director, you're kind of given those extras, right? Do you cast them?
A lot of
I was going to say, they're more than just extras because they're doing stuff.
They were, almost all of them were stunt people. That's probably where the money went, for the episode, because that whole attack in the hallways with the shotguns and the assault and all that, you know, everybody that flops backwards from a gun hit is a stunt person. Laurel Chartrand, I think was his name, was our stunt, one of our main stunt guys. He came in and attacked Charles. He's the, you know, again, we've got the black eyes, we got to paint it and all that. But super fun. We shot it at a skinny gate. So it's like got that stuttery kind of Private Ryan feel to it.
Can you describe what that skinny gate means?
You change the angle of the gate, and it takes away when each frame is exposed, there's a swinging gate used to be in the film world.
Right.
And if you change the angle of it, it lets light in at a different way, I guess. I don't know, a different angle.
Yeah.
So what happens is you have this called motion blur in 24 frames where everything's kind of smooth, right? And what the skinnier gate does is it stops, it takes away the motion blur. So it's all very crisp, clean movement, but it gets kind of jittery, but it also creates tension. Spielberg was, I mean, it's been used forever, but
yeah,
Spielberg used it to a fine art for Saving Private Ryan. And I think people kind of, we kind of jump on those things. It's like,
that's the first time I remember seeing it and noticing, or I didn't know what I was seeing, but I was like, what is that? Like in Private Ryan.
What the hell? Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know, it's more like a 16 millimeter shooting kind of thing.
Right.
A lot of 16 millimeter was shot like at 20 frames or something.
Let me ask you this. You're talking about this.
Anyway. You can always, you can almost see the film going by.
Yeah. You're talking about this in film terms, but obviously things now are digital. Is that when people are saying, I'm going to change the angle of the shutter? Is that with the same thing?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. You know, this show was
at
shot
this point,
film,
right?
This particular episode. Yeah. We didn't change to video until.
First of all, so. I just love that Phil's like, we were Betamax was our next step. Like, you shoot it on video. You weren't ever on, you were digital.
No, the next show, the Ghost Faces was also
that, sure, for sure. But this is, so you're calling it a skinny gate. Got to find this stuff fascinating. It's a skinny gate on film, but it's shutter angle on digital.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You can call it shutter.
But there's no gate on digital, right? So you can't use the gate terminology.
No, there's no spinning. Because what happens is in the film world, this gate comes down, the film moves to the next frame, and then it opens up and exposes the film. Because then you get each frame when it's like, if this is the frame, the shutter comes down, the frame moves to the next frame, and then it opens up. And it's doing this 24 times in a second.
That's fast.
At what point, Rich, do you use that on your next set? All right, guys, we're going to go skinny gate on this one.
Well, we actually are using it on the current show for fight stuff.
And do you call it skinny gate or do you call it?
No, shutter angle.
Shutter.
Because again, we're using digital. Right. There's no gate.
Right, right.
Well, there is a gate. It's just not moving.
And back in the day, to our listeners, we all used to say, check the gate. That was the last thing you did if you really feel like you got the shot. But you want to
the AD
sure no
does that
the
same
gate.
Thing on Dead Boy Detectives. He'll say, all right, we're checking. I'm like, we're not checking. We're not. Why do you say that? He's like, oh, I just like it. I'm like, no, you're confusing everybody under 40. Like, you're not checking anything. There's nothing to check.
Congrats on that, by the way. Say hi to Mr. Yaki.
I will.
And, Ruthie.
I will, indeed.
Isn't she on?
Well, I was up there. I'm going back up there. We had a couple of guys get a virus that slowed us down, shut us down for a little bit, and then a foot injury. So we've had a couple of slowdowns. So I'm back home, but I'm going back up on Sunday.
All right. Well done.
Tell Ruth hello. I will.
Miss her. I will, indeed. I will. She won't listen, but I will.
So it was a big stunt episode. A lot of the big fight at the end. Did anyone get hurt with all those guns and fights and swinging through door frames?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to think. No, unless somebody told you. I can't remember.
No. I just have a line here that was written for me that's saying, did anyone get hurt?
Oh.
How did the lawsuit shake out? Sorry, I'm just reading from the questions. So, hey, was your daughter on one of the wanted posters? Is it like that? Again, I'm just.
I don't know if I can say that.
Well, I guess maybe. That's a yes.
Why wouldn't you?
Is your daughter wanted by the authorities? That's my follow-up question.
Well, convicted? No. No. Yeah, she's in there. And there's another episode where Sam, my son Sam.
Remind me your daughter's name so we can.
Molly.
Molly, right.
Molly.
So there's a Molly Sugrisha wanted. Molly Sugrisha poster. I love it.
No, it's not Sugrisha. No, that's not.
I know. I'm just saying that's.
Not there.
It says Phil's daughter wanted. Yeah. Phil's daughter, yeah.
And it then has Phil's phone number.
Pointed here. Yes, it has myself.
That's awesome. I always like that Supernatural does that you guys work in, you know, personal Easter eggs, so to speak. You know,
yeah, that's part of the fun. I mean, there's I know myself and Jerry Wanick are always researching the towns we go to, and we'll find some weird little thing like. It's got the biggest pancake in the world, you know, and we'll or Jerry will do some artwork that coincides with that.
Oh, wow.
That sort of thing. So we do our homework. I do anyway. I love doing the little, you know, eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Spate, you do that too. You get your, you, but all of it, I mean, there was, I felt like I was always walking into the, you know, Segrisha Diner or, you know, Spate had the, you know, Fletch, Steve and
Steve,
Frank.
Steve Fletch and Frank's hoagies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. No. For sure.
Just hold that thought. We're coming right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Hey, we're back.
Was this episode influenced at all, or your shooting of it influenced at all by the film Assault of Precinct 13?
I can't say that I didn't look at it. I think I looked at a couple of the Siege kind of, you know, movies just to see what, you know, because it's all in one place and it's kind of, you're in a coffin, right? You're
right.
So it's like, how, you know, how did they light it? How did they shoot it? Not so much for story or acting. It was more technical stuff of like, how do they do this? And, you know, our rules are different. We've got to have rock salt, you know. Luckily, we're in a place in the country that uses, that could use salt in the winter for the
water. You know? That's great. Yeah.
Right.
So that made sense. You know, there's stuff like that that you kind of go, we need, if they were in New Mexico, it probably wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. So. Right.
I like the detail that you had to scrape off the paint with a knife to get them through the circle or whatever.
Yeah. It was it's a devil's trap.
Yeah. But it's not that easy just to wipe that paint off. You got to be like,
you gotta scrape it.
Yeah.
You know, and then same with the salt at the window ledge, you know,
right.
The guy, you know, moves and all of a sudden it's opened. And as soon as you open the ring, It doesn't have its power anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you recall what it was like working with Amy Garcia? We are friendly with her from her stint on Lucifer.
I wish we had more with her. She was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't have a ton other than we gave her the religious kind of side of things.
Right.
I think we could have given her a lot more. It just that the role didn't ask for that. But I'm glad.
Yeah, she's very talented.
She's super talented.
Yeah.
She would always say on the Lucifer set, she's like, you know, I was on Supernatural. I was the virgin. I was the virgin.
Yeah, she's proud of that.
Early on.
Yeah, she's so cool. She's so sweet.
What was your biggest challenge in shooting this kind of show? Because I know people will look like at a bottle episode, so to speak. Bottle meaning here we are in a single location, not running around to the woods or anything.
One set.
To do the episode. But it really is very challenging. I think almost more challenging because to keep it unique and interesting and moving in a four-wall set, or in this case, maybe an eight-wall set, you have the jail area and the lobby area.
Right.
How did you tackle that? How do you piece that apart and keep it moving?
Part of it is art direction with Jerry. He built a fabulous set that gave us all sorts of side rooms and the jail cells and hallways and like the back room where we had the recorder and the speakers, you know, around the place. And, you know, and then there was a little quiet room with Hendrickson and Dean have their chat. You know, I think that's what makes the show, how it can work better, is if you're given enough of these nooks and crannies within the place. One thing that was kind of interesting, part of the story that I researched, to let them in and then lock them in, right? And then have
the exorcism over the
system. Speakers was to get them out. And I think there's more than one of these stories, but in Northern Michigan, back in the whatever 1800s, there was a union thing that was going on with the miners. And they had this Christmas party. A lot of these were European descendants, Swedish, Norwegian. And there was a union thing. It was the owners were trying to break it. Anyway, what happened was somebody yelled fire. And this was in a hall that was upstairs from the building. And the way into it was through a stairwell. And somebody bolted and shut the doors so they couldn't get out. And,
oh, God. And
like a dozen people and kids died being crushed at the doors.
Oh, my God.
So those are sort of some things that we research. Like, you know, how do you lock the doors and then have all these people smash up into it? So there's a little bit of research that way, especially with Jerry and his art department. And I think it was called Heaven's Door or something like that. I forget. Anyway, it happened in Northern Michigan.
Wow.
So, you know, we did that with the demons. If you watch, there's a couple shots where they're all banging up against the door and kind of smashing.
Yeah.
They can't escape and they're going nuts.
Yeah.
But you just try and, I think the big thing is if the performances are there, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. Have you seen there's a movie with Mark Rylance called The Outfit?
I have not.
No.
You should watch it. It's all in one set. And it's amazing. It's 1950s Chicago gangs, you know, mafia kind of Al Capone kind of era.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah, what's Mark it called? The Outfit?
Yeah. It's a double, he's a tailor. He's a tailor for the mob.
Okay.
They have a drop box in the back room. And every time they come in to get the money out of the drop box, he leaves, you know, and it's this kind of twisty drama.
Wow. Cool.
Rylance is freakishly good.
He's so good.
Anyway, so when you have this problem of you can't go anywhere, you just try and make sure that the performances are given, because that'll drive it.
Yeah. And everybody was great. I mean, everybody in this episode was great. It really was well done. Well, Phil, this is another great episode, man. And this is obviously the kind of episode that in lesser hands wouldn't be nearly as good. Obviously, you cast great actors and you had great actors delivered to your door in the form of Jared Jensen and Charles Malik Whitfield, who were already cast. But man, DeLuise, the Amy. Rest of the supporting cast were great. And you just take a tight episode and keep it moving and interesting. It's a real skill, man.
Got to say, the one part that I really loved was the ending with Lilith.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So good.
Because, you know, it's a sweet young 12-year-old girl. And who's her name? Rachel. I think Rachel.
She's great, too.
And she was it was a small bit, but man, was it fun.
Yeah.
It was great. And dude, spooky. It also makes you realize, Catherine Bechner wasn't the first Lilith.
Yes. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a few, and I think, I'm trying to think if Rachel came. I think Rachel came back. We had a different one also. We had like three.
Well, I know you end up with Catherine Bechner, and you end up with Anna Grace Barlow in later seasons.
Right.
And then this young lady. And then I know there's another one in there too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It was great. It's so spooky. And so, you know, the shot of behind of her holding her mom's hand as they walk in. I also thought it was funny that she described them as a tall one and a good looking one.
Well, that's very funny. That's how people describe Rob and me.
Only not tall?
Only not tall or not good looking. But they do say two guys all the time.
Two humans.
Two beards.
Phil, thank you for being a part of this.
That's it. You guys are easy.
Well, this is for chapter one. You're back for chapter two, so don't get too excited.
We're going to have you back next week for Ghost Facers.
But I want you to know that your beard has become legend in our podcast for being part of our rating system. Like such a classy designer goatee, a curated goatee that for a very special review, sometimes the episode will get a Phil Zagrecia.
I'm just covering the 666 on my chin.
I knew it.
Yeah, we rate each episode in beards, so the Zagrecia is a real special.
Really? Not beard?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
We do it by beards, not stars, beards.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the one and only.
You get more of him coming up, but this was our time with Phil Zagrecia.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Hey, this is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We are going to take a quick break.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know? I've seen dogs eat a sofa, but not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy. She looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN. And order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Hey, everybody. Richard Speight Jr. here. And if you know one thing about this guy, it's that I love boots. I wear them all the time. And that's why I love Tecovas, because they are the real deal. These boots are Austin-designed, Texas-tested, and handmade down in the boot-making capital of the world, León, Mexico. Tecovas are all about style, comfort, and tradition. And they're not just about boots. Tecovas is Western to their core. They offer a bunch of other head-to-toe Western staples, like trucker jackets, the perfect jeans to go with your boots, performance pearl snaps, cowboy hats, bandanas, you name it, they got it, and they will get you outfitted. Tecovas believes in Western for all, and you can feel it when you go into the store. You'll walk in, you're going to be greeted like family, unless you don't like your family, in which case you'll be greeted by people nicer than your family. They'll offer you a boot shine, unless you're wearing sandals, and they'll even hand you a drink. And it'll be the hard stuff if that's what you want. Rob Benedict, I'm looking at you. And right then and there, you can get custom fitted for a brand new pair of boots. You can even get custom leather stamping or branding that'll make those brand new boots truly one of a kind. All you got to do is stop by Tecovas and get into your new boots today. But Rich, I can't make it into a store. They got you covered. Just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. So get on over to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey, it's Jeffrey D. Morgan again. Welcome back to the podcast.
All right, it's time for mythology.
I'm glad we're using the word mythology, which also sounds like a lisp word, because we're going right into some mythology that involves Lilith. Take it, Robbie.
Lilith, this is Lilith's first appearance.
Lilith's first appearance, suffering succotash.
Yeah, it's the first time we see Lilith. The character is based on a real-life Judeo-Christian lore.
Nice.
Why don't you tell them about the lore?
Well, she was the first female demonic figure. It was written that initially she was the first wife of Adam and made from the same soil as him, rather than a rib like Eve. But she refused to be loyal to him. Didn't want to be on the bottom for the dirty deed, if you know what I mean. And she was insolent. She left the Garden of Eden. Let me tell you something. She sounds like a walk in the park compared to the machete. You ain't taking no guff from nobody.
Time out. This is biblical that she refused. She didn't want to be on the bottom for sex.
That's part of the lore?
Wow.
That's weird. I just assumed that was a joke.
Yeah, no, that's funny. That's funny. It's kind of
how did you know it was real, Rob?
Because the garden. The Bible is nasty like that. You know?
Wow.
It's nasty like that. It gets nasty. It's down and dirty.
Yeah, you want to know one of my favorite Bible jokes growing up in the Bible Belt. What's the stretchiest stuff in the world?
I don't know.
Human skin. I know this from the Bible. It says Abraham tied his ass to a tree and then walked 20 miles.
Oh, man. All right. Well, so here's some more about Lilith. Some stories say her offspring are incubi or succubi, sired by an archangel named Samael, or earthbound demons she birthed after stealing Adam's seed while he slept.
Oh, huh? Stealing the seed while she slept bit. Do you know what incubi and succubi are? Because I don't. I'm just going to tell you right now.
Nope, not at all. I know incubus, banned from the 90s.
I'm going to look at, well, incubi would be plural of that, but let's look it up. Incubi.
Oh, incubi is just two bands, both named incubus.
Incubus. All right, what is incubus? All right, an incubus is a demon in male form in folklore that seeks to have adult relations, if you know what I'm saying, with sleeping women. The corresponding spirit in female form is called a succubus.
Holy moly.
That seems a tad on the nose.
Okay,
in medieval Europe, union with an incubus was supposed by some to result in the birth of witches, demons, and deformed human offspring. Legendary magician Merlin was said to have been fathered by an incubus. Parallels exist in many cultures. Walter Stephen alleges in Demon Lovers, some traditions hold that repeated dirty activity with an incubus or succubus may result in the deterioration of health, an impaired mental state, or even death.
Holy cow. That is just too much for my brain to take in right now. So these incubi and succubi were fathered, by an archangel named Samael.
Right. I like the fact that she has some earthbound demon children that she gave birth to after stealing Adam's seed while he slept. Do you think Adam would read this and go, well, how about wake a brother up? If we're gonna go through the paces of de-seeding me, I'd love to have a front row seat to that party, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Adam's really a heavy sleeper.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Ancient texts have her being responsible for stillborn children or crib death. Other stories tell how she would seduce men in order to use their seed to create bodies for demonic children.
I'm just laughing at Adam's a heavy sleeper. He sure is. Not this guy.
No,
ma'am.
I can't give my seat away.
you start playing Slobbering Blues on the meat horn. Believe you me, I'll be awake.
Oh, dear, dear. In the 1960s and 70s, the feminist movement found inspiration for Lilith and reshaped the story to one about an independent and uncontrollable woman. She became a symbol of female autonomy and gave birth to a music festival called Lilith Fair.
Ah, she gave birth to an entire festival.
I know, but in the 90s, there was a...
I remember that, sure.
Yeah, a female-led music festival called
Lilith Fair. With Liz Fair and Tori Amos.
Sure, yeah. Are you having fun? Good, because it's time for Fun Facts. All right, here we go, finally. The title means Justice in War, which means fight well once the battle has begun.
Huh.
Just simbello.
All right. There you go.
Huh. I thought it had something to do with juice.
I thought it was, yeah, I had no idea. But you know what? This episode is the first appearance of the anti-possession tattoo.
Yeah.
In 2008, Sarah Gamble said in an interview that she'll know if the show is a cult hit if fans start getting the same tattoo. Well, Sarah, we're here to let you know that it's
a cult hit.
A cult hit. Because a lot of people have that tattoo.
Lots. Lots and lots. You know who doesn't have that tattoo?
Rob Benedict.
Jensen and Jared.
Oh, but you do?
Of course. Dean's wanted poster lists Donald Stump as one of his aliases.
I wonder if that's a take on Donald Duck, only with a different last name.
Probably.
Michael O'Shea and the sound team were nominated for an Emmy for this episode, which is flipping awesome. However, they lost to themselves for an episode of Smallville.
Well, would you look at that? Well, that's exciting. You know, I honestly, I was really excited to see this episode, and I was not disappointed. Really excited to... It's a thrill to watch the shows that are, you know, the episodes that are always named and sort of the top episodes of this long run that this show had. And so,
yeah,
you know,
I totally agree. Good show. Good episode. Well done. Well performed. Well,
I'm a little disappointed that Justin Bello just means good job.
No, it means justice and war. It doesn't mean good
job. Get him. Go get him.
When you simplify like that, yeah, but it means something way more poetic.
It means you got this.
Yeah, you got this in Italian.
It's not, is it Italian?
I don't know.
I think it's Latin.
Yeah, well, but ancient Roman, ancient, you know, the same area.
Sure. Yes, same area. But I don't think we'd say Italian, but yeah.
No. Anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, what a show. What an episode. What a great time to read the TV credits. Robbie?
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Katie Cassidy, Lauren Cohen, Charles Malik Whitfield, one of the coolest names in show business, Stoney Westmoreland.
Yeah.
Amy Garcia, Peter DeLuise, Phil Amici, and Kurt Evans.
Juice and Bella was written by Sarah Gamble and directed by Phil Segrisha.
Editing by Tom McQuaid, who's a cop on the edge. Music by Christopher Lennertz.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
This episode originally aired on February 21st, 2008. A little trivia, that's 1 week after Valentine's Day.
And we know this because the last episode was on Valentine's
Day. Ooh.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine, written by Stephen Hine and Hayda Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty. Music provided by Tim Wynn.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter, won't you? At SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Hey, I got to say something. I really like that poster on your door behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
It's kind of cool.
This is one
of our Sunday shindigs down at
the compound.
The Loudon Swain poster.
That's right. Yeah.
The blue one. Record release party.
That's right.
Oh, nice. I can't see it. Mike's seeing it. Oh, there it is. Gotcha.
Yet another Phil produced show that I was a part of. Thanks, Phil.
So we'll see you again at 8:30, right?
Steve, I want to know where you got that 18-hour thing.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, it's all tricky stuff. Once you go and you're in one spot, it's like the toilet, right? You got cameras underneath the toilet. That's a whole different thing.
The following podcast. Wait.
This
follow
podcast.
The podcast. Hold on.
Wait. Let me do mine again.
Okay. The episode. I'll do mine too.
Jert Evans.
Like Steve. Hine leapt to the mic to be sure that we didn't say Jert Evans because the man's name is Kurt Evans. And we're going to say Kurt Evans. But for the record, we want everybody to know that Steve Hine wrote the man's name as Jert.
Story Mill Media.